Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to the Aotearoa Rugby Pod with Rugby Pass and Sky Sport. I'm Ross Carr, and we've got a bunch of questions to answer in this show. One's probably already been answered. Are the Blues and Crusaders ahead of everyone else? Absolutely. But they're up against each other this week, so who wins that game? How fast is Rico Ioane is another question. And what was going on with those refereeing decisions on the weekend? To break this open with me, James Parsons, former Blues player, of course, current Crusader down in Christchurch, Bryn Hall. To start with, let's lay some ground rules. If you guys are playing each other this weekend, you know, just everyone be nice. To start with.
We're always nice. We're good friends off the field, you know. So the big fella's 100th this weekend. So hopefully the boys can spoil his party. But it's exciting, you know. Tickets are selling pretty fast. I think there's nearly 20,000 tickets sold already. So it should be a full house for what will be an exciting brand of footy. Both sides, you know, in pretty good form. We've had 2 attempts to get this game going, failed attempts, so hopefully third time lucky.
Yeah, get COVID out of the way, Bryn.
Yeah, I was just about to say, just stay 7 days good in Auckland, just do what you need to do to get us on that field, because we've been really looking forward to it. I think last year we were pretty amped up around that fixture, especially where they've been sold out. And look, I think with how both teams have started, yeah, it's a great time for us to verse each other, and it's going to be a great acid test around how we're both going. So both teams are undefeated, and look, we're just looking forward to the challenge, because it's going to be a great occasion come Sunday evening at Eden Park.
Pretty easy for your family to come along and have a watch too, so that's pretty good.
Yeah, there's going to be that many around, so I've had a lot of messages already, so looking forward to it. Hopefully team gets named tomorrow, so hopefully selected, and then there'll be a few tickets coming my way if selected, that's for sure.
Well, let's start with the Blues. That was a very strong performance. Up front, out wide, they outclassed the Highlanders. They made a Highlanders team that had looked pretty good so far, looked pretty average. The Blues are a quality side this year.
Yeah, well, I suppose similar to the way I sort of credited the Crusaders last week, it goes back to the simplicity of their game plan. I think the platform up front, set piece was good. Scrum line-out operated really well. The clarity of their breakdown, so, you know, the strong carries got across the game line, their clean-outs were really crisp, so that allowed quick ball-up mentality, and then committed line sucked in defenders, and then that option taking from the game drivers to find that space wide, that's, you know, they made it look easy, but making sure those options were the right options. You know, the first one is, you know, the try with Stephen Perifetta creating an offload to Rico Ioane, then finding Oteri back, then you go to the second try, the big Harbour Bridge pass to finding Rico, and then Rico just, you know, finding Caleb Clark, you know, and then you use Imoni Nuara's try in the second half. I think the benefit of having Harry Plummer, you know, the forwards do the work up front with them all sucking in the Highlanders defenders, but then guys that have been game threats really sucking them in out wide, and Rico Ioane really running that hard line, Caleb Clark tucking in behind. You know, we saw against the Hurricanes, Oteri Black getting that ball in behind and setting up the try in a similar move, but this time Harry Plummer runs to the line, finds that wide ball to Stephen Perifetta, who then obviously finds Imoni on the edge there, and that was an easy try. I know the Highlanders defender slipped, but all these little strings to their bow, but it's the selfless nature of the Blues team and the simplicity of their attack, but the option taking of the decision makers, and I think Harry Plummer's really come into his own the last few weeks in that 12 jersey, and you know, taking the pressure off Otiri and Stevie at times, and you know, adding a few strings to his bow in that 12 jersey.
Put the shoe on the other foot, Bryn. Were you surprised that the Highlanders were that far off the pace, and why were they that far off the pace?
Well, I think Jipper's points were pretty good around the Blues attack, and you know, one thing that I thought was pretty impressive as well is I just think that they did a lot of aimless kicking, and what I mean in that sense is that, you know, they're traditionally really good at their contestable games, and you know, with Aaron Smith and then Josh Iwane doing contestable kicks, and they just weren't getting pay out of it. So, you know, they were going for the contestable kicks, but they were landing around that 40-metre zone, not getting the ball back, and then the Blues were straight on pressure with ball in hand. And so, you know, I think look at that first half, the Blues had 63 and the Highlanders had 32 due to those kicks. So I just think they didn't get a pay out of them. Coming back to Jip's point around the set piece, they were pretty dominant around their scrums. They won 100% of their scrums, dominant scrums as well, looking for penalties and then so I think just those kind of things in the first half that kind of just went with that, and probably coming back to probably the execution of the kicking game and not getting what they wanted off out of that through Nuggie's kicks. Like, not to say that they weren't bad kicks, but they just weren't contesting getting the ball back. And so just added pressure, and then coming back to Jipper's points around great decision-making on those tries. I guess just really, you know, at half-time, 17, they probably should have been up by more in hindsight. So, I just probably think that first half was a bit of that kicking battle, not winning that battle, and then, you know, the set-piece dominance was massive around the Blues, and they did that for the 480, and just felt like the Highlanders just couldn't really get into the game due to that set-piece and the Blues attack as well.
Well, we spoke about it in depth, didn't we, last week, about the 10-15 combo and, you know, Josh Iwane and Mitch Hunt working so well, and that was such a key, I suppose, combo that got them back into the game against the Chiefs. I know Jonah Nanaki was, you know, impressive, but they orchestrated something, that leadership style around there. And then when I saw the team name, I was surprised seeing Mitch Hunt on the bench. I just thought, you know, he is a little bit of a general, and his kicking game has been extremely accurate. And I suppose he's a real voice and a general out there for them. And maybe just in hindsight, someone they missed out there. And you know, Connor Garden Bishop, someone that's been really impressive. And I think you do need to find a place for him on the field. But I do think you needed Mitch Hunt out there, someone with that experience, that big game experience. And maybe that kicking game lacked his nous. And I do have to credit, though, the Blues defence as well, around, you know, the one opportunity that the Highlanders did have in the 22, Dalton Papali'i gets over the ball, and from turnover, that instinct to turn, you know, defence into attack, you know, turnover ball, and yes, we know it didn't turn into a try, but it could have been the try of the season, and we all know that it wasn't a forward pass, but that was impressive from me, seeing that defence into attack, and that mindset was ruthless. You know, there was a bit of a shot across the bow, which, you know, the Blues took personally from their coaching group, saying they're a South African-based side and they just want to plot around the field, and they were pretty sure they were going to beat them in tempo. Well, quite frankly, it looked like, you know, that tempo was beaten on the other side of it. So I think, you know, there are different strings, different styles. As I mentioned those tries before, there's an offload style of game that they're showing, but there's also a nice structured game that the Blues are showing as well.
I think that's what I like about the Blues, is those guys, especially in the loose forwards, Akita and Hoskins and Dalton, they can be the hard guy, they can be the flair guy, they can be the guy who busts through the line. They're so multi-talented.
But it goes back to, I'm talking about the decision-making of the game drive, but I also think it goes back to their decision-making, when to bring that part of their game out, and I think they're nailing that. They've got a good balance around when they're bringing out those aspects of their game, and I think that's the most impressive. And I agree, Bryn, that they probably do think they probably should have been a bit more up, you know, a little bit of inaccuracy. You know, I caught up with Tom Coventry today, and, you know, just dropping that at the back of the mall, you know, knocking the ball out, just those little inaccuracies. You know, I spoke about the Hurricanes, you know, letting the Crusaders in. You know, those you can't have those mistakes against the Crusaders if you want to beat them. You can't let, you know, them in. You can't let them have a sniff. So when you're in that 22, you've got to come away with points. If it's three, or if you're going to kick to the corner as a pack, you've got to go there and you've got to get seven, whatever it count. You can't knock it on and let them get away with clean air, because as we saw, although that was a mighty Chiefs defensive effort, which I thought was fantastic, they held them out, and you know, repelled their maul. In the end, that defensive toll took its toll, and that probably cost them the game in the end. And you know, that's something the Blues will be wary of and working extremely hard on this week, is that accuracy in the 22 to make sure that they make every post a winner.
And against the Crusaders, Bryn, that's obviously important. Now, we've heard that Tony Brown says that you guys have got the game to beat the Blues. So what is the game to beat the Blues, Bryn?
I think I might just go back first around just on what Tanu Umang has said as well, Jip, just around the Blues with how they were playing. And I think that really stuck a thing with me was around complementary rugby, team rugby. And so you've talked around, you know, the game drivers really having a good understanding and putting them in good parts of the field. You think about Oates, Otedia, his general play kicking through general play around, you know, long kicks, attacking kicks, or, you know, Harry Plummer as well as that second pivot. And then, you know, they're marrying that up really well with the forwards, with their drive, their set piece, dominance at scrum time, lineouts. I know percentage-wise it wasn't 100%, but it was good enough to win those moments. And so they're just complementing each other really, really well. And so you're seeing that on the field, whether they can win it through their set-piece dominance, which they did on the weekend. Then they've also got the ability with their game management drivers, being able to drive the game really well. And then we haven't even talked around the X-factor around Rico Ioane, getting him into space, and the likes of Mark Talia and Stevie P, who's playing well at fullback. So, I think complementary rugby is a good way to put it.
But he's bang on. But the reality is it's a different beast this week. And the reason that these guys have probably come from behind after slow starts the last 2 weeks against the Hurricanes and the Chiefs is their set piece. You know, the Chiefs ran at 42% at line out. They ran at 50% at scrum. And you know, that's what allows the Crusaders back in the game. And it wasn't a perfect night at line out, and you know, scrum time the Blues were sharp, but you know, you just can't, it has to be a great night up front to allow the Blues to play the game that they're playing. So and there's no bigger task than coming up against Sam Whitelock and Scott Barrett line out defensively, and even Mitch Dunshay I thought was pretty effective as well off the bench. So you know, the Blues will be sharpening their axe at line out time, because this is the true test you know, for them, and that's the exciting thing. And in front of their home fans, you know, that test match atmosphere for guys that, you know, are looking to get back in the black jersey, but there's also guys in there that, you know, are really excited by the challenge of potentially, you know, getting into the squad for the first time. So no bigger occasion than to nail the set piece to allow the Blues game, that complementary rugby, to unfold. Because if we don't nail set piece, you can't get the game going to beat the Crusaders, because you just can't withstand that amount of pressure and make 200 tackles and win the game.
Yeah, 100%. But what they did have is the ability to bust open. I want to talk about Rico Ioane at the moment. Like, his speed reminded me of when he first burst on the scene in the Lions, and he would take an outside break and he was gone. No one came near him. And maybe for a couple of years he'd seemed a little sluggish in comparison. Rico has just gone to another level. Give us the inside word. What's the story here?
I don't know, but he certainly looks a lot leaner. The biggest thing I gave you, what was it, when they played the Canes round one, just the ability he could shut down that time and space defensively, I saw it, and now we've seen it on attack. I just think he's hungry to make a statement, and he really wants to make that All Black 13 jersey his own. Mm-hmm. And he also really wants to see the Blues have success, and he knows he's a key cog in that. And he knows when he's playing really well and being the difference, that the city's going to have a lot more success and get him behind the club. You know, more so, and he's taking that on his shoulders, and he loves that. He loves that, you know, feeling that of that excitement and putting a team on his back, and he's certainly delivering at the moment, and it certainly excites me as a fan, and he's certainly got some wheels, like, and he is just not afraid to go on the outside, is he? It's that raw pace, and it's just uncoachable. It's just it's just natural talent, and you know, when he gets in those open spaces, it's going to be exciting to see if you can do it more often than not against the best team in the comp, that is the Crusaders.
Yeah. If you were picking the All Blacks right now, Bryn, would you be able to go past Rico, considering how he's looked through the first three rounds?
Well, look, he's been great. I think it's been a flow on from last year, being that squad. And yeah, look, I think we'll always know how quick and how much X factor he is now, and how elusive he is with the ball in hand. But, you know, Jibby, you brought up a lot of times actually around his defensive efforts, and being able to put teams under pressure with his lines, but just because he's so quick. So, yeah, that's been a massive improvement in his game. And look, you know, when you give that kind of player time and space on the attack-wise, it's really hard to defend. So, I think it's going to be a great challenge again. Like, you know, Jack Goodhue's playing as well. So,
yeah, for me though, the things that I love most, like the speed and the big tries, are awesome. But it's his selfless plays that he brings in. The little tip pass to Caleb Park score when, you know, he could probably fall over the line himself. The committed lines he's running to create space for others to score tries. Those are the parts of his game that he just wants to see the Blues do well, and he's doing whatever he can do to create opportunities for the Blues to succeed, and that's what, you know, excites me the most. And, you know, when he goes this next level up, you know, when he's bringing that attitude to the All Blacks, you know, that's the exciting thing, is everything about his performance and his preparation is about the team doing well, which is exciting.
He was on the receiving end of a pass, you mentioned it before, that appeared to go backwards. It went upstairs and it was ruled to have gone forwards. There was another call over the weekend with Brad Weber where they went upstairs and he appeared not to have touched the ball, and it was called that he touched the ball. What do we do? How can we fix this? I mean, that's a problem that's so obvious.
Well, I think first off, we'll start with Rico's one. If you go on to YouTube and look up Total Rugby Forward Pass, they did a physician did a study or whatever, and it's called relative velocity. And basically, it's always going to travel forward. The ball will always travel forward. It's that, due to the term relative velocity. Even if I'm running forward and I throw it over my head backwards, it will still travel forward as such, just due to the nature of physics. So they did a whole thing, they put lines on a grid, and that's where the term, it's out of the hands backwards. So it's judged on the player and the vision out of the hands, not the picture of the ball travelling to the player. And if you look at the way Aki is travelling at speed and out of the hands, the ball goes out of the hands backwards and is received by Rico in a position that still looks to the naked eye like the ball goes backwards. So under the current rules, that was adjusted. I think on YouTube this was 9 years ago, before the 11 World Cup or whenever they did it. It's an IRB YouTube video. It clearly states that this is not a forward pass. So they've just clearly got it wrong. And then on the Brad Weber, that just to me, he's banged his arm and it's gone forward. So then the captain's challenge should have been a successful one, and then it would have never have got to the yellow card penalty try at a crucial time where the momentum shifted from there, did it not? You know, like it went to 18-10, and you know, from there the pressure mounted and it went from set piece to set piece penalty, and they eventually got another try through Will Jordan, and you know, with the baggage of 10 losses, it snowballs and the game sort of gets out of control after they've probably made 170 tackles at that stage.
But Brent, it must surely affect the confidence of the players, and especially with the captain's challenge situation, if you know that you're going to go upstairs and, geez, anything could happen. It's a lottery. I mean, we've been very good to the refs so far in the series, because they have been very good so far, but these two things were mind-blowingly obvious.
Yeah, I think Akita's one, we were watching actually at home the other day, and yeah, the difference between, if you look at Sevu's one and Akita's one, is that Sevu's one, actually his hands was travelling forward. So when we actually were watching that on TV, we're like, yeah, that's probably forward, because you could just tell that Sevu's hands had gone kind of forward, so it drifted forward, made it look worse. But I looked at Akita's one, his hand actually went backwards, and it felt like you said, you just alluded to, jump around, you know, it's always going to go forward, doesn't matter how fast you run. He's probably running about 32 kilometres an hour at speed. It's always going to go forward because, you know, you're going at that speed. Because another example I want to give to you, and it doesn't come up, but if we're going to go back on, like, what we saw on the weekend, if you look at David Harvilli's try, when he busts through and he goes forward and he's running very similar to Akita, and he chucks it forward and he passes it, and that's for a try. You don't think about it being as a forward pass, but if you actually have a look where it's delivered and where it ends up, it should be forward.
Yeah.
Predominantly exactly what was
but it's backwards out of the hand, so it's fine.
It was very similar to Akita's one, so you just want consistency.
I don't think anyone had a problem with Akita's except for the TMO. Mm. Like, everyone was like, pretty much, I'd say everyone in the... But this is the problem. Like, we shouldn't even be discussing this in a negative sense. That just should be the try of the season, and we should just be talking about it. You know, like, I think...
You're taking it off Brent already.
Yeah, no, but, like, Ben came on, and from a ref's point of view, they said they're going to ref with more common sense. And we sat on here last week and we said, we commended them. We said, this is definitely happening. They're definitely, you know, Bryn said he's out there and they're certainly reffing with more common sense, and it's great. Well, I think they got it wrong this weekend, personally, because the Brad Weber situation, I can live with the Leicester Whainuku one, because that is 50. That's great. I can live with that sort of mistake. Just like players, you make mistakes like that. But the Brad Weber and the Akira Ioane forward pass, that is clear and obvious to me, and that's like a not straight throw. That's not an area you can live with, if you get my drift, in terms of a player ref mistake reference. So those are mistakes to me that you can't live with, and they have to be called up, because if you don't, then you know it allows them for confusion to this week. And I think they'll come out and they'll acknowledge the mistake, because they have been really good at that, the refs this year, and they've put their hand up. I think it was Moody's case. He should have been yellow card, and they said they got this wrong and that wrong. So I do think they'll come out and say, hey, we've got this one wrong and we've got that one wrong, which is fine, because these didn't cost games and they didn't cost points. But let's not get to the point where it does, because there's so much that goes into it for these players and teams, and so much relies on it, that if a call like that does cost it, and it's a captain's referral by Sam Kane, and he's right, and it still gets denied, I mean, that would be cruel.
100%. It's just, I find it hard to get my head around. Brad Weber certainly did. He was salty, Bryn. Did he say anything to you after the game?
No, I didn't get a chance to hear from Brad. But, yeah, I think you're right, Jip, around, you know, we're players, we make mistakes in games. You know, we give away penalties, we give away stupid penalties, and, you know, we reap the consequences of that. And, you know, it's fair credit, you know, like you said, around Joe Moody as an example, making a mistake, if they come out in front of it. So, you know, like you said, I think if they come out and say they got it wrong, then as players, you know, we can live with that, because, you know, there's a form of accountability that's been said. So, yeah, I think as a player and as a consumer, someone that's watching, you just don't want it to dictate or have like a massive influence on a game tying or game winning moment moving forward, because, you know, you don't want it to be like, you want it to be won on its merits. So hopefully moving forward, it doesn't come to that.
It would be horrible if the Blues Crusaders game, probably the most looked forward to game, came down to it.
No, let's just not even jinx it. I couldn't cope.
And it would go against the Blues.
Oh. Well, I'll tell you what, if that Brad Weber one hit his hand, I mean...
Yeah.
Struth.
Actually, one of
give
the
me strength.
I noticed when he got yellow carded for that tackle, and I mean, I don't know the 100% on this law, but he appeared to have one of his feet behind the goal line kind of at the same time that he hit the player that he was tackling on the line. Do you have to have both of your feet behind the goal line?
Yeah.
You do, both of them.
He never got back onside. Yeah. Look, I'd love to jump to his defence here, but no, he was shockingly offside in that instance.
You might have been refereeing with getting a metre back. I think you've got to have 2 feet back. Yeah,
but it just, the referral should have just never have got to that point, because it was a forward pass.
Yes.
Yeah,
it was a forward pass.
Now, another person who really made a big impact on that game was Richie Mwonga, as usual. He appears to have gone to another level again, Bryn.
It's a classic growth from... We've seen Cody Taylor's try against the Highlanders, so they've been doing that nice little tip short ball, and we know Richie, when he sits in behind forwards, he's the best exponent of sitting out the back, and when the forward pulls that pass back, he can split those two defenders in there, because if you bite in on that short tip ball where Cody runs and he scores that try against the Highlanders, there's a nice little gap there for Richie to run into if that defender shoots off out in here. And he did it twice, straight after half time, which actually led to that incidence of Brad Weber having to make that tackle. But he is the best exponent of that, because if that hole shuts for him, he's also great at giving that short ball there or pulling out the back to create space on the outside. And that goes back to the decision-making I was saying about Oteri and Plums for the Blues before. Richie's a master of sitting in behind those forwards and making the right option and picking the right guy to create the space or find the space and find the opportunity for himself or for others, or for telling the forwards to play and, you know, use that tip or carry themselves if nothing's on out here. And it was just a further example and exponent, but they'd shown, you know, Cody scoring that try in the first two rounds, and that he hadn't actually been running a hell of a lot himself, and it was just like he'd pulled trigger you know, in the second half there, and got his running game and just got him behind them, and it just started creating opportunities, and it just shows that he's just always thinking a little bit further ahead. So now going into the Blues game, you know, the Blues will be thinking, well, we've got to watch him run, but then you've got to, you can't forget about the Cody Taylors running that short ball, so you've just got to make sure you cover all your bases in there, but then you've also got to be able to cover in here and the kick space. So there's a lot going on, a lot to think about, and it's perfectly timed going into the big test match, and it's just, you know, orchestrated perfectly by, yes, New Zealand's best 10 at the moment, you know, to be able to set up a game plan and go into, you know, Eden Park on Sunday afternoon, sun's on his back, and, you know, pulling the strings in a Crusaders jersey, which is exciting for the fans, because both teams, I believe both 10s, I reckon they're the two form 10s in the competition that are, you know, putting their teams in great position, but also making great decisions both sides of the field.
Yeah, I think just on that, I think it's, yeah, those are all valid points. I thought Richie was outstanding on the weekend, but I think what kind of helped there was just how forwards laid the platform for that. And, you know, you probably saw that at the back end of that, the start of the second half or the back end of the first half, just around, you know, the Chiefs had to make over 200 tackles. They attempted 200 tackles, sorry. So, you know, look, I think for that first 40 minutes was a bit of a stalemate. And then, you know, through all those tackles, and, you know, you talked about how courageous they were. You know, we had 23 minutes of possession in hand, and then the Chiefs had 11. You know, so, you know, going at that back end of the second half, you know, it's pretty tough when you made all those tackles, you know. So, but it just came back to our platform as well. I thought our boys did really well around our breakdown. I know we talked around at halftime. We probably didn't get the tempo and the kind of clean out right, and we probably let them off with a bit of pressure due to that. So we had a bit of a focus that come the second half, and then if you look at that second half, we got into their 22 three times and scored three times during that time. So, and they were actually a high phase count, I think, before Fitzu's trial.
They made you work for it.
Yeah, it did, but yeah, it was 15-16 phase we actually did finally break them. But, you know, for that kind of pressure to be built, you know, you've got to be able to, we've talked about it, everybody's got a role in that play. So, you know, Richie doesn't get those opportunities to be able to go out the back as a pivot and get to go through that line if the boys aren't animated around him and running lines. You know, you've seen Cody Taylor run that line, or it might be another person that has to run that line, but, you know, if they're not all animated and in sync, then Richie doesn't get to go through. So, yeah, it's good for Richie, obviously. You know, we love it when Richie's playing well, and, you know, hopefully the learnings that we had in that second half around quick ball could be at the forefront coming this week against the Blues, who traditionally, like you said at the start, their defence is really, really great, make really good decisions around, you know, that tackler one plus as well, and they really do dominate the collision as well. So it's going to be an absolute bounce. Well, hopefully the weather's good as well. Sunday evening, mate.
Don't worry, I'll tell the North Shore Sun to head over. It's always sunny on the North Shore. But I'll pick up on your point, what you said, because at the 20-minute mark, the stats came up and the Chiefs were 62% possession, 65% territory, and they did win that first 20 minutes. They were quite dominant, and I think they were winning the breakdown. They were physical, and similar to the week prior, you know, there was a lot to like about that first 20 minutes, and they probably would have wanted a little bit more points reward than you know they had. And then at the 71 minute mark, the stats came up and it was the Crusaders with 71% possession, 71% territory. So to flip those on their head after, you know, what is it, 20 minutes, and then at 71, you know, that's how much ball and how much defending the Chiefs had to do. So I just wanted to point out, like, the Chiefs, there's a lot to like about the Chiefs. I know they lost another game, but they were right in that. And there's a few calls that went against them. And you know, the few of their stats as well, like their lightning quick ball, when they had ball in hand, they ran at 70% lightning quick ball. So they're very vicious in their clean out and that ball up mentality. And they've got the ability to play. They had 70% gain line. So when they're carrying, they're actually carrying through a very good Crusader defence. So when they had the ball, they were great with it. So it's just being able to hold on to it. And that comes back to what I was talking about before, is their set piece. If they can just focus on, if the Chiefs can really nail down their set piece, sort their line out and sort their scrum out, and not give the opportunities they gave to the Crusaders. Because I'll go to the crucial part. We spoke about that 45-minute scrum. The Hurricanes gave a free kick to you guys last week, and it ended up in an overthrow try to Cody Taylor. 52 minutes, same thing. It was a Chiefs scrum, and I don't know, they stood up or something, and it flipped a free kick to the Crusaders. Mm. So then it became a Crusaders scrum. Crusaders got a penalty. They kicked to the corner. Maul. And they did make you work for it, but eventually Will Jordan scored that try with the inside ball from Richie Mwanga. If they had just kept their discipline at their set piece and it was their ball and didn't give the opportunity to the Crusaders, it could have been them down in their end and potentially scoring points for them. You know what I mean? Like, and that's the crucial thing, is they're just ruthless. If you give them a sniff and, you know, allow them to go to their set piece, to get a penalty, to work it down there, and then guys like Mwanga and Jordan and co, you know, can just work their magic once they're in their 22 and they're patient enough to work 15, 16 phases or do it in three. So it's just that ruthless nature. But I did just want to acknowledge there's parts of the Chiefs game that are, you know, really impressive and a lot to like that they can work on if they can just get that platform starting to hum. I don't know what you felt, Bryn. Because I felt like the score sort of blew out and was a little bit unjustified for the amount of tackles and defensive work, because they really did make you earn those points.
Yeah, it did, mate. We had to really, really work out. And I guess our skill set at those kind of stages where we needed to, we were able to score points. But yeah, like you said, it wasn't the 3, 4, 5. We were tied around trying to break them down. And then, you know, Will Jordan's try was obviously during the high phase count, and then Fitzu as well was 15, 16 phases. So, you know, defensively they were there. It was just like up around set piece. And look, we like to think that, you know, we can sometimes get an upper hand around our scrum and get some penalties, and then, you know, with our line out as well. So, yeah, I think we were tested as well around our attack into that first 20 minutes. Yeah, they were on top of us. You know, a funny thing about that, actually, we, you know, Jip, you have the captain, you get to choose which side you go, and we actually thought we were going with the win the first half, but we got on the field and we're actually going into the win. So that was actually a first for a lot of our players, and probably actually might have come into the reason why we started so poorly in that probably first 10, 15 minutes. But, yeah, mate, there's a lot to like about Anna. You know, I don't want to say it just because we've just played them, but, look, if they can get a right set piece and they can get a bit more percentage around winning their scrums and lineouts, attacking will take care of itself. And actually, they defended for long periods of time defensively, where we actually really had to work hard to score our points. So they could take a lot of learnings. They could take a lot of learnings from a game. And we've got a big game against the Hurricanes, which would be probably one to get away.
I reckon that'll be a good game.
Yeah.
Two teams in similar kind of spots in a way.
Yeah, well, you'd have to think the home team might have the advantage, but I just hope that the Chiefs do take the positives out of it, because it was a massive effort. Like, it's hard to go down to Crusader Town and get a victory, and there were parts of the, like, their Maul defence. Like, they weren't getting through there. Like, Jacobson got a turnover, and one of them stole the ball off them, you know, like, and they just repelled it, to the point that the Crusaders got that line dropout. But the next option, Scott Barrett said, I'm not going to the corner again to end up 50 metres back. I'll take the scrum. And then Brad Weber gave away that penalty and they took the three. So that's a small win, you know, through that Maul defence. So I just thought there was a lot to like as well. Although the score blew out, there was parts of their game that they should be happy with.
Well, that takes us to the tipping comp, the Sky Sport tipping comp. Get into it and see if you can beat our boys. Let's go straight into the pick. You going all right?
He's winning.
You going all right, aren't you?
He's taken my top spot.
Am I?
Yeah, no, it's been cleared up. You're on 13, I'm on 12. Devastated.
Oh, come on. I thought I wasn't going to get that point for 5 tries. Just come on.
He was salty about the penalty try over the weekend.
Yeah, well, this shouldn't have been a penalty try, but anyway, we won't go there.
That's a winner's attitude, eh?
Yeah, well, it's interesting this week because we know that I'll go Blues and he'll go Crusaders, so... Yeah.
Hand on heart, I mean, let's be credible here. Do you think the Blues can beat the Crusaders?
Yes.
Do you think they will beat the Crusaders? You do?
I've put my picks in already.
Yeah.
It's done.
Right. This
done.
Is your head, not your heart talking.
Both. Head and heart.
Okay, why?
I just think if they can play the way they've played with the attitude and the hometown advantage, with the confidence they've set, and I know having the chat that I've had with them this morning that they're certainly not ahead of themselves. I think they're setting themselves up for a good week. They certainly know it's going to be challenging, but why not? Is the reason, you know, at what point do you get over it and stop thinking that it's, you know, impossible? They've given themselves the best opportunity to do it. They've just got to go out there and focus on themselves. And I go back to the points that I've said about the Crusaders in the past weeks is control the controllables, which is us as in the Blues, and not giving them the easy wins and the outs. So the discipline and the willingness to stick to the game plan and controlling themselves will give themselves the best opportunity to win the game. And I think the set-piece battle, if they can get the line out and the scrum to the level that it has been against the other sides, then they're right in the hunt. But if the Crusaders have the same stats around what they've had against the other teams, around those sort of 40s and 50s at set-piece, then it'll be a tough day at the office.
Now, the last time the Blues beat the Crusaders at Eden Park, you were playing for the Blues. What do you think is going to happen this weekend? I mean, obviously you know who's going to win. Why are you guys going to win? That's the question. Why are you guys going to win this?
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Oh, man, I don't know. I think it's going to be a tough game, I think. I just look at the... just the growth of how the Blues have been playing, not only from last year, but then a flow-on effect to this year. They've got some great acquisitions, with Nepo Lalak bringing him with their props, and their set piece has been very, very dominant in probably the last 2 weeks, and they've got parity around.
That's what I'm hearing.
Beautiful.
They're just doing very impressive, Austin. I just think that it's just going to be a great test for us. I think
this PR agency again.
God,
there you go.
Come on, mate.
Why are you going to win? Why are you going to win?
I can't say why, mate.
We didn't ask you how.
Yeah, I'm just saying why.
We're looking forward to the challenge that's going to be ahead of us on Sunday evening.
Four-time reigning champs. Come on, tell us what you really think. Give me something that I can record and send to them to say this is what they think.
Mate, it's going to be a test match. It's going to be an absolute test match.
All right, we're not getting anything out of it.
Excellent. That was a fail. Okay, what about the Hurricanes versus the Chiefs, Chipper?
I've gone Canes by 8.
Canes by 8.
Yeah, I think it'll be tight. But I just think off the bye, and just the amount that went into that Crusaders game and the effort to back that up will be tough in another away game, and just the Crusaders coming, the Hurricanes coming a bit fresh, and just the firepower. I just feel like they've maybe just got a little bit more firepower in that sort of loosey back three area.
Yeah, Bryn.
Where's that game being played?
Wellington.
I think I'm probably going to go. Yeah, I'm going to go Hurricanes. Actually, I'll probably go. 6 by 6 inches. It's going to be a close game, I think.
Yeah.
I think the Chiefs making a lot of tackles and, they're putting a hell of an effort against us. But, I think there's enough there. I think there's enough there to be able to warrant an upset for sure. But, I just think with the Hurricanes, a rested week, hungry, and being back at home, I think the only reason I'm pretty picking them will be that home advantage. And it'll be close, though. Very close.
I reckon it could be a good week. For the Chiefs to give Nate Harris a run, because he played in that trial. He's a 20 odd test, a bit of experience, he might be able to shore up the set piece. I know he's coming back from a long injury, maybe off the bench or something, just something like that to change it up, and then take a little bit of a senior role in there this week, because it could be a crucial week that the Chiefs could, go down there and, play a little bit of an ambush style. I was just thinking then, I was thinking maybe to freshen them up, because they did say that they are going to change the squad a little bit to create excitement and opportunity. I heard Neil Barnes say that last week when they named the team for the Crusaders. So,
Do you reckon they'll do that after two losses?
No. I just said that he said that they were going to, move guys around and give opportunities in the squad. And I was just thinking then, I was pondering in my head who that was there. And then I was just like, well, Nate Harris did play in that trial. And I was just thinking, well, he's a 20 test All Black. Why would you not get him in there now to spice things up and really take a leadership role and go down there ambush style and lead the charge sort of thing? I don't know. I'm thinking on the run here. I don't know why I started blurting that out, but I did.
It is a big game for them. There is this record that they don't want on the line as well, and that's a good place to bring in a guy like that, because you don't want their record. Admittedly, losing 12 in a row, which is more than any other New Zealand team has done in Super Rugby, is probably unfair in that they've done it in Super Rugby Aotearoa. They haven't had easy beat games against teams from other countries, so it's really unfair to put that on them. But as a team, you don't want to come off the field and see that record shine up in front of your face and being talked about.
Yeah, I mean, they certainly will be, I would say, using it as motivation to make sure they sharpen the tools this week. I don't know if they'll be discussing the losses as such, but I have no doubt, as players, it's not a record you'd want. So you'd be dotting your I's and crossing your T's throughout the week to make sure that it's not the case. I have no doubt about that.
Well, how do you balance that, Bryn, that element of fear versus the need for positivity when you approach a game like that?
Well, it's tough, because I think, Jip has said it before in the previous podcast where we've talked around this issue, is around sometimes you just try too hard. You try, you're on the training field too much, you're doing too much, and sometimes, being on the field or just doing too much is probably not the best thing. Now, look, back an example around, I think Jip was your 50th, actually, when we won down in Tasman. We went, I think we went 11 game, 10, what was it, Jip? 10, 11 yeah. games on the trot losing?
Nine.
Yeah, nine on the trot. Mm. Yeah, and obviously our inspirational skip was playing his 50th.
Oh, yeah.
I just look back for that example when we were in that kind of, it was a very similar situation. We kind of just, we just went out there and played. I don't know, what does that look like? And I guess we just kind of played with no fear and around, yep, we had a game plan in place, but we just went out there to try and be real decisive, and I think that's the main thing around that, just being real decisive. And look, you're going to make mistakes, but the more decisive you are around certain things, it gives you an opportunity to win. So
there's no expectation. Yeah, look, no team. There is that no expectation. So because these people sort of expect you to lose, it does give you that no fear. You almost do play with no fear. And I remember the night as well, we had Francis Soley and Peter Aki were throwing skip passes and flick passes, and they were just sticking. For some reason,
yeah, and just on that trip, and sometimes you need a bit of luck. Need a bit of luck to get out. And that day, I think about the passes were going, and you're flow on. You just think everything's going your way. So look, it's going to come. That win's going to come, and for Chiefs fans and for the Chiefs, you hope to think it's on the weekend. But yeah, it's that no expectations and just being able to play, and then you need a bit of luck as well, which. It's pretty tough in this, especially in this competition. Ross, you bring up a pretty good point. Sometimes you can play, but the Sunwolves or a lower list team, you can get that confidence back with that win and have that feeling and understanding of what it feels like to win. But, it's just brutal to Super Rugby Aotearoa comp, and, just with the points that we've talked about and a bit of luck, it could change and they could get that W possibly on the weekend.
Now, England came back from what has been a pretty average season against France in the Six Nations this weekend. They obviously managed to figure that balance out. Epic test match. What did you like about this?
Well, I like both sides, to be honest. You've got to be impressed with the French side and where they're at. The way they like to play, their attacking style. You talk about, no fear. That they just throw everything at it and potentially what probably cost them, but... give them a couple more years. They are going to be a genuine threat at this World Cup. They're a young side. There's a lot to like about them. And they were still within reach towards the end at 23-20. They had the ball on the 22 and Dupont, unfortunately knocked it on. but he was exceptional on the day. But England fought their way back into it. They didn't have the best start, but they went back to what they know. Their mauls and Billy Villanapolo, I think he had 18 carries. So they went to what they know and they got the match winner through a man who's been under a lot of pressure in Itoje, and he probably silenced a few critics with a pretty big performance as well. So a lot of kicking, but I think international rugby, it's hard when you go from watching Super Rugby Aotearoa where, one team kicks 14 times and the other kicks 12 times to watching international footy where you do have to have a bit more strategy and they both sides kick 29 times. It is a different style, but, I just think they probably won the arm wrestle and the chess match and the possession and territory stakes wore down and France just ended up having to make a lot more tackles in their half and probably chance their arms one too many times and gave England the opportunity to chip away with penalties and put themselves in a position to get that match winner late. 76 minutes. It was late. Mm. It was late, but nonetheless they were in a position to do so and did it.
Does that make it?
I'll tell you what, man. France are going to be scary, man, coming 2023. Look, there are young side that's coming on the up, and look, I just think the way you look at that second try, the second try drip, that special around over the top, and the return ball, and having block runners animated and going down lines, that's special, and it's just something that we haven't seen from the French probably in a while. And then look at that first try around the short side and using square hands and the chip and chasing the Dupont, using that great ability to get one hand and then get it back inside for that try. So I felt really sorry for him to knock on that ball.
Yeah.
He's just been so good in the Six Nations. And for a decision like that, I've done this so many times in my career. Sometimes it's a foot or it's a hand that just loses the ball. And unfortunately, that was the losing of the game there. But look, mate, I just think that, France, they're brewing something special in that environment. And come 2020, they're going to be a team to watch, especially at home as well.
I think that's the funny thing is, they lost, but it's the brand of footy they're playing.
Yeah.
That our natural reactions to talk about them, and that's nothing against England because at the end of the day they won the Test match, but they were a joy to watch. It was something about that French flair, and almost like you didn't know what was going to happen next or what could happen. And when they scored tries, it was pretty to watch.
Yeah, they've got depth.
And that's it. It's that French flair that you used to see. You look back in that 2000, what was it, 99 World Cup, and we're talking about a couple of,
it's not mentioned
that flair, when you played the French, you'd always see the flair, and look, I know it's just great to see, and like I said, 2023, they're brewing something pretty special, and they're going to be hard to beat if they keep continuing playing this attacking brand of rugby, and then again, they have that Northern Hemisphere style with their kicking, like you said, Jip, there's been 30-odd kicks in that game, but yeah, it's refreshing to see for probably France, and we just haven't seen it in a long time, for them, the way they've been attacking and bringing that taking flair back.
Who do you pick at 10 there? Excuse my French. Intermac, Jalibert, Bello and Carbonell. Where do you go in the long term? Is it Intermac? Definitely, yeah. Intermac?
Oh, for me, I think he's got a good balance. I think he's got a good balance around his tactical kicking, when to attack and when to play that territory-based game. From what I've seen, I've only watched a few number of their games, and I've just been really impressed around his balance and game management. And just knowing when to have the flair and knowing when to just rein it back in to make sure that they do finish games off and win games rather than pushing it too far, personally.
Bryn?
Yeah, I'm the same. I think the more that he can have his combination with Dupont as well, and they can keep going that. And, I think those are probably the two that I'd go with, just around his game management. And then, again, having that flair, having that balance, he'll only get better with playing more test matches. And, you talk around combinations moving forward. I think Dupont and him, definitely for sure.
Yeah, the youngsters are impressive. Let's talk about the youngsters down south. Who's impressed you so far this season as far as the youngsters in Super Rugby Aotearoa?
I went with one from each team. So I was trying to think of, I could go for a multiple at the Blues, but the one I went with from the Blues was Harry Plummer. I think he's really found his place at 12, and I've really liked what I've seen from him defensively. He's really courageous. He does the donkey work there. And attacking-wise, I think he came into his own on the weekend and really added to, I suppose, the attacking flair of the Blues and really came into his own while there were all these other threats going around. And we spoke about Richie, you know, opening up opportunities by what they'd shown in weeks 1, 2, and 3. Felt like Harry did that really well from what the Blues had shown in weeks 1, from the bye, and then, you know, really coming to the line hard and not just crashing but using the ball to the width. I've been really impressed with him at 12, and I think it's exciting because he looks at home there. He looks really comfortable, and I know he's been around a bit, but I just think he's a young man just still finding his trade at Super Rugby level, and he's made it his own. I thought Sam Darry went really well at lock as well on the weekend for the Blues. He was, you know, just in those effort areas, you can see that he's got a big future as well. Dallas McLeod, I think down in the Crusaders, has made a big stamped his mark in the 12 jersey. And I know he's on the bench on the weekend, and I know Davey Havili doesn't like the 12 jersey, but man, he looks good in it.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm sure he'll probably be that, and he won't see as many minutes while they're fit, but he's been good. Devin Flanders, I'm a big fan of at the Canes. Again, I know he's been around a while, but the more minutes he gets, he's pretty exciting for where his career can go. He's been great for Hawke's Bay, but he's just great with ball in hand, physical, and, you know, abrasive in that breakdown area, and he can hit defensively. He's a big, solid body. I think the Highlanders, everyone's going to say this, but Connor Garden-Bashir, you know, I didn't really take much note of him at Mitre 10 Cup when he was with Wellington. Didn't really see this coming, if I'm honest, but he really played himself into it pre-season with the Highlanders, just from form, really, and they've just given him a crack, and he continues to impress. And then for me at the Chiefs, again, another guy that's been around a while but is backing up his county's form is Itini Nanaisatoru. You know, another young man, but he's starting to really deliver at Super Rugby level now and looking really, really comfortable and strong. What are you smiling at, mate?
I've like written down 5 and you've just taken all of them. Oh. Just in great points as well.
Beautiful.
So I want to get some Tulu there. But yeah, I agree. He's been fantastic for the Chiefs. Flanders, yeah, he's impressive. He's going to be great moving forward. But probably, well, you picked all my picks, Chip. The only guy that I've really got on here, and it's from I feel like pretty bad saying this, it's from my team, but I think Lester's been fantastic, and it's going to be tough for, you know, you've got to think about it. We've got George Bridge waiting in the wings, who's going to be coming back from a pec injury very soon. So, yeah, I think he's been fantastic around. People would see his scoring and his ball in hand, but, you know, his growth around his decision-making defensively, not on the weekend actually, but missed one on the weekend. But I think just getting better defensively around his reads and working in the pendulum, and then his skill set around his kicking game as well. That I've been seeing in training around kicking off that second pivot. He's got a left foot that he's been working really hard on, and his communication skills have really improved in the last 12 months. So, you just have to go to Leicester, and we've talked about Ethan Blackadder as well, who's had a run of form of injuries, but he's been pretty solid as well. But, Jip, mate, you've taken all my dudes there.
Leicester's the only guy I've ever seen stop a Safa Moore on the wing. And that was pretty impressive, I can tell you that. And since he had quite a few Crusaders, can I add Imoni Nawara there for the Blues as well? He's been pretty good too.
Yeah.
I had all the other ones, but you pretty much took all of them. You took them all
for me. Yeah, I know. So. You just chucked a few Crusaders in there, so I want another Blues player.
Should we add him another chance to chuck a Crusader?
No,
last
he's
week
enough.
About 5 of them. He's only played 2
Yeah.
Just 2. That's 2 for me.
But I'll give you another chance to plug a Crusaders player. We discovered on the weekend, the general public did anyway, about David Havili, and, you know, he had a surgery on a bowel issue last year, and that took him out of rugby. And it's a lot more serious than probably people actually thought. And he had to go through quite a lot to be back where he is now. Can you talk to us about the kind of bloke he is and how he got through it?
Oh, mate, Davey's massive for us as our squad and as a bloke as well. He's a top man. And, yeah, well, I remember that, actually. I think we're actually down in Queenstown. We're down in Queenstown on our bye trip. And, I think, you know, it's a toothpick that had got stuck in there. And then, you know, it was in hospital. And, you know, we didn't know going forward, obviously, how bad it was. But, you know, he was in hospital and he had a pretty tough surgery around, you know, getting cut open. And, it was really tough for him because I think at that stage he was, you know, to be honest, I probably would have been in the All Blacks considering his form of how well he was playing, and then, you know, came back really, really strong, and then, you know, broke his hand as well. So, you know, for a guy that started so well and, you know, had a lot of resilience around his injury, and so, it just wasn't on the field, where he brings massive amount of, just massive around stuff for us, around just off the field. He's a massive leader within our sport. He's our vice captain. He's got such a vocal voice in our group around how we drive our standards around on and off the field. And so he's massive for us. And, you know, I'm stoked for that he was able to come back. And, you know, for this year, he's playing a position where he's probably played a lot in his junior grades and, I guess, at the start of his career. And he's massive for us. He's Razor's used a lot around him being one of the best utilities in the world around what he can add for us. He can play 10, 12, 15. On the wing, you put him anyway, probably play half things, right? He'd probably do a better job than I could, actually. So, you know, when you've got that kind of guy in our squad, he's just so massive for us, and we're stoked to have him back for this year.
Does he have a pulse? Like, he seems so calm at all times.
He is. He's calm. He's calm. He's got a fiery side to him as well, which is that competitiveness that he has in him. So, but he is, mate. I think that, you know, that couple of years leading that Tasman Marco side has made massive gains around that, and it's kind of just flowed into the Crusaders environment. And when he speaks, the boys listen. And I think the best thing about Dave is that he's a good man off the field. You know, he'd be the first guy to have a conversation with the young fellas coming through to make sure they're comfortable. But then, you know, he's be able to talk as a leader within our group. And I think it's special to have that in that kind of characteristic in our team. And we're definitely a better place when Dave is playing with us.
He's going to be vital if the Crusaders beat the Blues this weekend. Is there anything on this, boys?
Brunner?
Brunner? I see the Blues jersey around, mate. If we win, you've got to wear a Crusaders jersey.
No, I'm never wearing that jersey. Not a chance. Never, mate. You've already worn a Blues jersey. That's not a punishment for you.
Plus, we'd have to pay to ship it down to him.
Mate, I know you've got gorse pockets, so let's do money.
what do you want to promise with?
Put $50 on it, eh?
All right, $50, mate.
There we go.
And you put it on.
And because we're nice guys, we'll donate it to charity.
That sounds good. Great. How about we make it 100?
Right. Charity. Jeez, I thought you had gorse pockets.
Okay, well, come up with a charity for next week, and we'll announce next week which charity it's going to.
Well, one of the teams will have a charity, so whoever's teams wins, it can go to their charity.
Great. Oh, jeez. This is brilliant.
Anything not to wear that jersey, mate. I'll say that for free.
You've worn red and black before, mate.
Well, unfortunately.
Absolutely. Well, you heard it here first. Crusaders win, was that?
No,
what it
was? No. Yeah. Come on, Blues all day.
We'll see you this weekend. Thank you to Bryn Hall down in Christchurch, James Parsons in Auckland. I'm Ross Carl, and that was another Aotearoa Rugby Pod. Check out Sky Super Rugby Aotearoa this weekend on Sky Sport and also Rugby Pass if you're streaming around the world.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.